On this episode of Off Course Agility, it's just me talking about NADAC topics. I'll be talking about the changes in NADAC for 2021. I will be talking about the NADAC Top 10 for 2020. And I'll have a final comment. I'm going to talk a bit about the NADAC changes for 2021. All this commentary is based on Chris Nelson's video that he released talking about the announcements and changes in NADAC for 2021. It was about a half hour video. I'm not going to take that long. I will just cover the topics real quick that he had in there and make my own commentary. So the first thing on his video that he talked about was funding junior handlers going to champs. He mentioned that at one point NADAC had, this was early on in the COVID, about a year ago, I guess maybe around March of 2020, NADAC had asked for donations. I actually did make a donation to NADAC at that time. And the people who donated to NADAC then, it wasn't that long into 2020, but at some point, Chris and NADAC came back and said that they wanted to refund the money, and they gave people who made those donations three choices. You could give the money to the junior handler fund, or you could take a credit for NADAC trials, or they would literally send you a check back. The money, the small amount I had donated, I just said, give it to me in a NADAC trial credit. So that's what I did. But Chris on this video said that about half to maybe three quarters of the people actually said to donate the money to the junior handler funding so junior handlers could go to champs. And so NADAC does have some funds. So he did say that junior handlers going to champs this year would be funded up to some amount. Like, they can't go stay at the Hilton probably, but there will be some sort of per diem limit, and they're just going to apply that evenly to all the junior handlers that come to champs. So if you know a junior handler who's in NADAC, who wants to go to champs, this is a good year to do it, because some of the expenses will be funded by NADAC, which is good news for the young people of the sport. Second thing that Chris talked about was equipment changes in NADAC. The first one is effective immediately. He was talking about tunnel bagging requirements. Also, he mentioned that there's a new equipment document on the NADAC website that is separate from, I guess, from the rules document. I'm not really sure what it's separated from, or the from the exhibitor handbook. So there's a new specific equipment document. And in there, it specify, he mentioned that it had examples and specifies the tunnel bagging requirements, which now are you need four sets of tunnel bags on a 15-foot tunnel as a minimum. He did say you can use more if you want, and five sets on a 20-foot tunnel. So that was new, a new requirement, and that is effective immediately. Subsequently, I think I saw on the forum that they said if the tunnel, there might be some exceptions. I don't know if they put that in the document yet. But if you had a tunneler's course, because that would be a lot of bags on a tunneler's course. But if, like, say, your tunneler's course, you had, and I've seen this, where first tunnel maybe just gets taken once and it's completely straight on. There's no possibility the dog is going to do any angle on that tunnel. that you might be able to get away with just the two sets, one at the beginning and the end of that tunnel. So if there's a tunnel on the course like that, you probably could use, I'm sure the judge is, if it's a real trial and there's a judge there, judge will be okay with just one set of bags on that. But if there's any chance that the dog's coming in on an angle or the tunnel is at any type of angle, then these new tunnel bagging requirements apply. The second thing in regards to equipment that he said was that starting in June of 2023, only plastic jumps will be able to be used. So there will be no more metal jump stanchions allowed in NADAC. And I've seen metal jumps, and sometimes I think they're actually better, but I understand they are quite heavy. So for hauling them around, if you're hauling the equipment, they're really heavy. And if a dog smashes into them, they don't have the give as a plastic jump does, or a plastic jump is just going to fall over, or it's going to give way, expand a little if the dog cuts into it on a turn and hits the side. So the jump and the jumps now need to be plastic. That includes the jump cups. So the that's starting in June of 2023. The entire jump needs to be plastic. So, and over the years, I've seen some nice. I used to really like. I don't remember where it was, but essentially the jump stanchion was plastic, but they had really nice metal cups for the jump bar. So I think those would not be legal starting in 2023, that the whole thing has to be plastic. He also mentioned something, and I'm not aware of this. I haven't seen it. Sounds cool. That he said some manufacturers are using some sort of magnetic system for jumps, and that would be okay too. I haven't seen that, but that would be cool. Some sort of magnet at the end. I'm imagining a magnet at the end of the bar, and it just magnetically holds in the positions. Interesting thought. Haven't seen one like that. I wouldn't mind seeing that. Maybe I'll have to go Google and see that, but I'd really like to see it in person. Sometimes things in videos don't represent until you actually see them. I'm a show me type of guy. Show me it. I want to see it in person. All right, the next thing he was talking about was age restrictions. So, and I think this will start in June of 2021. So June 1st of 2021, you will now be able to enter a dog in intro that's 15 months old. Currently, you can't enter any dog in NADAC unless it's 18 months old. So they're doing this. He called it a preliminary test for about a year to see how it goes. So in intro, you will now be able to enter your dog at 15 months starting June 1st. And the reason he said that wasn't immediately effective was they need to give the software manufacturer, the software people, you know, that everyone uses to do the trial secretary and everything, time to update it so that it will allow a dog at 15 months to be entered into intro. The next topic that Chris had addressed in the 2021 announcement video was COVID rules. Here he said that essentially all the rules, and he mentioned most of it was lifting of rules, all the rules will stay in place for now. So that means VTs, all the current rules or lack of rules, VTs will remain in place. He mentioned in this portion of the video that 50% of trials are still being canceled, I think he said. So that's still a lot of trials, and I've seen that to some extent myself. I'm not checking the trial calendar as much as I used to, but I have noticed that, you know, there's still a lot of trials that are canceled that were on the calendar for a certain date. He also said that the allowing local judges to be able to judge more local trials, that's still going to carry on. He mentioned that the rule where in NADAC now at a trial, I guess in VTs too, because I've seen it, I've done it, allowing you to carry your leash on course, that's obviously going to stay during the COVID rules. But he indicated they may actually keep that rule past, you know, whenever they do decide to lift the, or reinstate, maybe is a better word, back some of the normal NADAC rules. But he indicated that they would not be changing rules, the COVID rules, until NADAC went at least 90 days without a trial cancellation. So I guess that's what his standard is for possibly knowing when the end of our current pandemic is over. And I'll just say, he didn't say this on the video or anything, but we still have a long way to go. It's not easy to get a vaccine. Very hard right now. There's not enough. Everybody wants one, but you can't get it. And the final thing he mentioned when he was talking about COVID was talking about the small space courses for VT. He talked about it's difficult for NADAC to design those courses because NADAC, as he said, is a big space venue where the standard really is for obstacles to be 21 feet apart. And if you're trying to design a NADAC course in a 60-foot by 60-foot square, it's pretty hard. It's, you know, it's got like jump, turn, jump, turn. Yeah, there's a lot of turning in 60 feet, and it's hard to get any run of extension because you only have 60 feet, and if you put two things at 20, you got 42 feet if you put two obstacles in a straight line, and you have the ring or, you know, the end of your 60 feet. So you can't have the dog run into a wall or something. So he mentioned how difficult it is for them to design the small space courses, but he indicated that they would still be trying to supply small space courses. He then talked about champs, and he indicated that as of now, championships is tentatively a go. He mentioned that the site for 2021 in Ohio has triple the number of stalls that are really necessary. So if due to COVID, they need to space people out more, they probably have that ability at Springfield, Ohio, which is good. He also said, depending on how the pandemic goes, championships still could be canceled this year. But he's hopeful. I'm hopeful also. Because as I just mentioned, you know, we're seeing that the vaccines are starting to roll out. Championships is in the fall. Hopefully by then we can all have a vaccine. I think we'll still be under, you know, masking and social distancing type rules too. But people will be able to feel safer after you get your vaccine. The next topic on there that he talked about was the top 10. I'm kind of not going to talk about that because I'm going to have a whole nother segment about the top 10 this year, the 2020 top 10 of NADAC. What he said in the video actually is kind of wrong, as I interpret it now. The top 10, he said, would include VT, and it does. But as I said, I'm going to have another topic about VT. The NADAC top 10 on this podcast. The next topic that Chris had in the announcements about 2021 was Toys in the Ring. That started, I believe, I know I saw people doing this in 2019 when I still was going to trials. And he said that currently you can use a toy in intro and novice. He said that that preliminary test of that rule went well. So they are keeping that rule. So you will still be able to use toys in the ring. However, he said they will expand it to open and elite. And that would be effective immediately. So right now at trial, at a real trial in 2021, you could have a toy in the ring for open or elite. Frankly, I don't know why anyone in open or elite would really want a toy in the ring. Essentially, you are, you know, you're not getting a cue. It's just a training thing. And I would hope by the time you have your dog in open or elite, you're not needing a toy. That's my opinion. And also my opinion on that is, and this maybe applies more toward intro and novice, but when I saw this rule being implemented, it was an intro. So my dog Trace, he's not always the most focused. Let's say I have things to work on. But when I was kind of in line there, you know, waiting, like I know I was after the dog Schmitty, say, and Schmitty's owner came to line and showed the tie, you know, declared the toy to the judge, I was like, all right, I'm hanging back. I'm not going in the ring. I don't want to be trying to go to the start line while this person's throwing their frisbee or their ball around the ring, and I got my dog who's, you know, his focus problem isn't as good. So I personally didn't want to go in the ring. So I felt, and no judge ever like yelled at me for being a little slow into the ring. And I don't see how a judge could. I mean, throwing a toy around the ring is, to me, a distracting thing. That's also hard, a bit hard to train for. So I don't know why a person in an open and elite would do it. And I think it actually, knowing that it was a little annoying to me, I would think some open and elite handlers might find it annoying if the dog ahead of them was, now granted, dogs in open and elite probably are better trained than my intro novice dog. Anyway, my two cents on toys in the ring. Anyway, it will be allowed in all the classes in NADAC, effective immediately. And then on the video, the last thing, Chris just thanked all of us in NADAC. He mentioned that they will be trying to send out title certificates. And this I wasn't completely clear on, but you can watch the video yourselves. I'm going to drop the link to this video that had the announcements in the show description for this podcast to the video on YouTube. So you can watch it yourself if you want. And I believe he has it kind of marked by time in the descriptions on YouTube to say the different areas that he talks about. So the very final part on there, he was saying they also, it was something about sending out maybe some ribbons to people. The NADAC would maybe send ribbons out. I'm not sure certain major events, you know, titles or things. I wasn't clear on what the ribbons were going to be for. But he said it was over in the secret corner. So maybe they're still working on that one. So that's it for the NADAC changes for 2021 and Chris's announcements in the video, which I mentioned will be, I will drop the link to the YouTube video in the descriptions. So that's it for this section. I'll be back with talking about the top 10 for 2020 of NADAC. I'm going to talk about the NADAC top 10 for 2020. First, I'm going to review how you get on the NADAC top 10. And there's two components to the top 10. There's the top 10 by each class in NADAC. And then there's the top 10 of the classes for the individual breeds. So the type of dog, by the type of dog. The minimum you need to be able to even make one of these lists is 3 elite Qs. So no one can get on the top 10 unless you're an elite dog and only in the classes that you run elite. So if you run elite and you get 3 elite Qs, it's possible that for that class with the 3 Qs, you might get on the list. Now, there's a lot of ifs to getting on the list because it involves how popular your breed is for the breed list. And for the overall class list, well, you have to go to a lot of trials. A lot of trials. And in general, I talked about this last year when I talked about the top 10. The top 10 really is a reflection of how many trials you can go to and essentially your dog's Q rate. So the higher the Q rate for your dog and the more classes you enter in a trial for all the different classes, all the, you know, more runs for all the different classes, and if your dog Qs most of the time in those in elite, then you have a chance of making the top 10 for that class or on the class for your breed. So I'm kind of a data guy in a way. I mean, not that I look like looking at numbers sometimes. So this year, there's a lot of numbers to look at. NADAC preliminarily released the top 10 with a combined list. So the points were combined between people who went to actual trials and people who did videotaped runs. So the initial cut of the top 10 was a combined list. And I looked at that list, but I didn't save it. I don't even know if I could have saved it. But I looked at it, and what struck me back then was that, wow, the numbers didn't go down. In the year of COVID, the numbers didn't go down. They actually went up, the amount of points in the individual classes. Well, somewhere after NADAC preliminarily released the combined list, and after Chris's video, I would say too, at the beginning of the year, where he said the top 10 would be both, it still is, they actually sent an email. The email only went to people who were on the list or could be on the list. So essentially, elite handlers. So if you were an elite handler and you had a dog that was in a class in elite, I believe you got an email from NADAC asking you whether you would like the top 10 as a combined list or a split list of actual trial points and videotaped points. And I don't know what the results of what that was, but obviously the people who voted to split the lists won that poll or that survey, because then subsequently NADAC republished the top 10 as two lists. So there's one list of the dogs that only have points from actual trials that they went to in 2020, and a list of people who only did videotaped runs for the classes. So this is kind of a weird thing, especially when you get to the breed lists. So in the breed lists, you can actually have two number ones. There's two number one beagles. There's the number one beagle in regular in VT and the number one beagle in non-VT. And that can be the case in many of the breed lists. because now you have two lists. There's a number one on each list. So essentially for pick your breed, any breed, Shetland Sheepdog will say, there's probably a number one on the VT list, and there's probably a number one on the non-VT or the actual trial point list. I didn't look up any of this. Obviously, the top 10 is on the NADAC website. Currently, you can find it right on the landing page of the NADAC website. So looking at the numbers a bit, which I like to do, I'm going to first start with the actual trial points. So the list of the classes for people who went to actual trials, they were down. That's what you would expect in the year of COVID. There weren't as many trials, so the number should be down. So for barrelers, the 2020 range, the range was from 370 for the number one dog down to 110 points for the number, I'll say the number 10 dog. There could be ties and stuff. I'm not going into big details here. But the range on barrelers was from 370 to 110. If you had that many points in regular trials for barrelers, you made the list of actual trial points, top 10, in that class. That amount of points was about 84% of the points in 2019. So it was down like 15-20%, which is pretty amazing in the year of COVID that it was only down that much. Chances, the top of the chance, the number one chances dog was at 380, and the last dog listed in the top 10 for actual trial points was 220, which was down about 40%. So that was about 61% of the numbers on the chances from 2019. So there was a big drop there. The next class on the lists is gamblers. Now, this one is the exception to the rule. So in 2020, the top dog had 210 points, and the last dog on the gamblers' top 10 had 130 points. That actually was 31% higher than last year. But in 2019, gamblers didn't run for the full year. People were just starting in gamblers. So that's actually probably why that one's actually higher. More people were doing gamblers at the fewer trials, but it still ended up being more points. For hoopers, the points, the champion, the number one dog had 315 points. I think I have that right. Maybe it was a bonus points, I guess. And the low dog, probably the number 10 dog on Hoopers, had 110 points. That class also was about 66% to 50%. You know, it ranges. I think the bottom number might have been 50% of 2019. And the higher number was about 66% of what was in 2019. So on the 2020 actual point trial points list, you see the effect of COVID and the reduced number of trials. In the jumpers class, the number one dog had 355 points, and the number 10 dog, I'll say, had 210 points. That was about 68% on the high end of the points of 2019 and about 60% on the low end. So there was definitely a reduction there. Then we come to regular. Now, regular reflects the biggest reduction, I would say. So the number one dog in regular had 705 points, and the top 10, 10th place dog had 395 points. On the high end, that was about 50% of what it was in 2019. The number one dog in 2019 had 1,340 points in regular. And now in 2020, it was 705 was the number one dog. So there was a significant drop in regular, which makes sense to me. Less trials, less regular runs. Touch and Go. The Touch and Go was number one dog, had 300 points in 2020. And the low dog, top 10, the 10th dog in Touch and Go was 170. I should say in regular and jumpers, those points are combined across all the jump points. So in the top 10, jump height doesn't matter. It's just points, just points. So you could be an 8-inch dog with the most points and you win the top 10 as opposed to a 20-inch dog that might have a few points less than you. They would be ranked, you know, number two or somewhere else. Now I lost my place. In Touch and Go, the number one was 300 points in 2020 and 170 was the 10th dog in Touch and Go. That was 62% less than 2019. In Tunnelers, 375 points. Once again, I guess bonus maybe. Always the odd numbers always throw me in some of these classes. 375 points was the number one dog in Tunnelers, if I wrote it down right. And the 10th dog in Tunnelers was 190 points. So 19 Qs. Last year, that's about 75% on the high end and about 66, 67% on the low end. So just for the sake of argument, in Tunnelers last year, to be number one, you had 500. And the last dog in Tunnelers in 2019 had 280. So 99 Qs less than the number 10 dog this year on Tunnelers. And that finally, and the final class of the top 10 is Weavers, and the points for the number one dog there was 390 points and 200 for the 10th dog, which was about 75% on the high end of the points of 2019 and 64% of the points on the low end. Now, that brings us to the classes again, but now for people who ran VTs, videotaped runs. So these were the ones submitted to NADAC by videotape, and the people got 10 points if judged successful. When you look at these classes, the interesting thing here is the points on the people who did VT in 2020. It's pretty much comparable or higher than the amount of points that were in the classes in 2019. So looking at this part of it where the top 10 is by the class, I can see why people would want it separated. Because the VTs, there were a significant number of people that did a lot of VTs. Now, when I go through the list of the points for the VT classes, keep in mind that in 2019, the most, according to the rules as I understand it, points you could get from VT runs in 2019 was 120 points total. You were allowed 10 submissions per month across classes, not in a class, across classes. So essentially, 10 Qs a month you could get from VT, and for the year, you could have gotten 120. And when we go through the numbers here, you can see how VTs have definitely helped NADAC this year because it's quite significant the amount of runs that are being put in. So for barrelers on the VT list, the number one dog there had 700 points. The low dog on barrelers had 270 points. In chances, the high was 670 points, and the low was 460. There is no gamblers in VT. That can only be done at a trial. Hoopers, 700 points was the number one Hooper dog. And the number 10 in Hoopers on the VT side, 270. For jumpers, 650 points for the number one dog, 340 points for the last place dog. For regular, the number one dog in regular had 1,370 points in regular, which, you know, I just said the most you could have gotten last year if all you did was regular VTs would have been 120. That is a lot of runs for that dog. It's amazing. The low on the regular, on the VT classes, top 10, 600 points. For touch and go, it was 760 points for the number one dog and 260 for the 10th, or the last dog on the touch and go list. For tunnelers, 680 points from VT runs. And the low dog on the top 10 of VTs and tunnelers was 240. 24 tunneler runs. Wow. And then the last class, weavers, 700 points for the top dog in VT. And the last, number 10 dog in weavers for VT, was 260 points. So it's really quite amazing the amount of points that were done in VT this year when you look at it there. And just to mention a few other things from gleaming the list, last year when I did this top 10 thing, I actually read every dog. I'm not doing that this year. But I am going to mention just the number ones. So on the actual trial list, almost all the classes were won by Piper, and the owner is Chapman, Christine Chapman. I happen to know her, so I know who that person is. And Piper was number one in barrelers, chances, hoopers, jumpers, regular, touch and go, tunnelers, and weavers. The number one dog in gamblers was Cody, and the owner is Bonner. I do not know that person, so I can't tell you the first name. Do not know. But congratulations to you guys for being number one on the actual trial list. It's amazing you were able to get that many points this year at actual trials, I think. Now, in the VT list, this is going to be really easy. Every class was won by the dog Win, W-Y-N, Win, who obviously won. And the owner is Weber. I do not know that person either, but that person, to clarify, you know, how many people are doing VTs this year with NADAC? Remember, the most you could have done was 120 points last year. 10 submissions. So that's, is my math wrong? I guess it's not 120. 1,200 would be, I've been saying this wrong. 120 Qs, because you have 10 Qs a month for 12 months in 2019, times 10 for the points. So 1,200. This dog, Win, who won every class in the VT list, 6,230 points. So essentially 623 video run cues. Amazing. And, you know, if you work that out, say 2-day trial, 16 runs, If you queued every run, that's 38 trial weekends. Wow. That person, I don't know how they had the time to do that much course building and everything, but more power to you if you were able to do it. It's just amazing. Now, if you want to know all the breeds, I'm not going there. But if you've been a listener to this podcast, you know I'm a beagle lover. I'm a beagle lover. So I'm going to tell you about the beagles. So the number one beagle in the VT list was my sister's dog, Belle. She had 110 VT points in regular, which is fantastic. I'm so happy. The number one dog in the actual trial list was Daniel Rose, owned by Jackson. And Daniel Rose had 80 points in regular. In touch and go, the number one dog in the VT list was Belle, owned by my sister Peters, Leanne Peters. And Belle had 50 points in videotaped runs in touch and go. Daniel Rose at actual trials was the number one dog, number one beagle in touch and go with 30 points. But another reflection of how 2020, you know, the year of COVID, has affected things. In 2019, there were three other beagles in the top 10. And Daniel Rose and Belle, I think Belle was in four classes in the beagle class last year. But she only got regular and touch and go this year. I think she might have been on jumpers and she might have been in tunnelers last year, I think. I may not have that exactly right, but she was in four classes somewhere. And she really had just begun elite in some of those classes last year. But there was last year in 2019, there was also a beagle called Jelly. There was a beagle called Mojo. And there was a beagle called Cece. And Cece, I know, has been retired, so I don't think Cece was probably was not competing in elite this year in any, you know, videotaped or actual trials. So Cece wouldn't have been on the list. Also, there is other data on the website. You can actually see the raw data of all the elite dogs in the different divisions. So I did see in 2020, there was one other elite beagle called PDQ. So PDQ had didn't make 30 points in whatever class I saw PDQ. It might have been more than one class, but there weren't three Qs. So PDQ was not on the beagle list this year. Maybe next year. I don't know how old the dog is or whatever. So if you want to know how your actual breeds did, you can go to those breed lists on the top 10 for 2020 in NADAC. And once again, they're broken up. So there's a number one. And that makes for some interesting, irregularities or oddities, I guess you might say. For example, there's a Yorkshire Terrier listed on the VT in jumpers. But there's no Yorkshire Terriers in the actual trial list for the breed. So some breeds may show up on the VT list or on the trial list, and they won't be on the other list. It's, you know, interesting. And there's actually, there can be two different number ones. There can be two different number twos. There's a lot of dogs. So there could be some dogs that appear on both sides of the list in two different spots. So the splitting of the lists at the breed level makes it a little weird, if you ask me. But I can definitely see how I think it was a good idea to split it at the class level, because there is a difference between going to a trial and doing VTs. But I can see how VTs have really helped NADAC this year by just looking at the numbers in those top 10s. So on the website for the top 10, you have those lists by the breeds for the regular trial points and for the VT points. There's also some raw data lists for, I think, VT and real trial for all the dogs that were in elite. It's a real, if you're a number person, there's lots of numbers. The other Easter egg there that I was curious to see is there is a list of how many dogs compete in NADAC by breed. So I'm just going to mention some of the higher breeds. Well, first I'll mention the Beagle. There's 15 Beagles that compete in NADAC. And that number is reflective across all the classes. So that probably, I'm going to assume it might be just by registrations. So I'm assuming my Beagle Trace is in there, even though he didn't get any cues this year. We did some VTs, but we never cued. And we didn't go to any actual trials. So I think that list is just by registration. I know it does include all dogs by breed. So if you're curious what type of breed you might want to get, if you want to make the competition a little easier for you, I can tell you these are the breeds to avoid. I'm going to just tell you some of all the breeds on that list that I saw that have more, 100 or more people, 100 or more dogs. So, and these are in no particular order. In the mix category, the 12-inch mix, there's 105. The 16-inch mix, there's 167. The 20-inch mix, there's 565 dogs. The Border Collies, you might think that's the big dog, the biggest dog. And you're right, if that's what you're betting. There's 709 Border Collies in NADAC. There's 374 Australian Shepherds. There's 138 mini Australian Shepherds. There's 105 Golden Retrievers. There's 120 Labrador Retrievers. There's 100 Pembroke Walsh Corgis. And there's 309 Shetland Sheepdogs. So those are all, and I may have missed something, so I'm not guaranteeing this is right, but those are all the dogs I saw that have 100 or more dogs in NADAC. So those are the ones. So in the breed category, the top 10 by breed, those categories are going to be harder to win, harder to get on the top 10 because there's more dogs competing, going to trials, doing VT. So it's harder to get, you know, three, if you're a Beagle, three Qs is going to put you on the list. Three elite Qs will put you on the list. Not so with a Shetland Sheepdog or with a Border Collie. You're going to have to get whatever the 10th place dog has on those lists. So if you're thinking of getting a new dog and you want to have a shot at, you know, you like a dog that's not one of these more popular dogs, look through the list, pick a dog that's not as popular. It's easier to get on the top 10 in the future, if that's what your heart desires. Anyway, I think that wraps it up for the NADAC top 10. And I will be back with another topic in a little bit. So I'm going to wrap it up. And for my first topical podcast of 2021, I'm amazed how long I've gone. I thought my topicals would be short, but this episode is going to be an hour long. So just to finish up, I thank everyone who listens to my podcast, and I'll remind you that you can help me grow the podcast by sharing with your friends and subscribing to the podcast wherever you find it, or follow whatever the proper choice is at wherever you get the podcast. I'll remind you, you can get the podcast at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, And if you search around, you'll find it in a lot of places. And you can always go to offcourseagility.com and you'll find our anchor homepage where you'll find all the episodes of this podcast with the details and the information about them. A final comment or two. NADAC also did their survey for 2020. I don't think that was sent out, but I'm not positive. I know I saw it on the forum, and I did take the survey. I think maybe it was on Facebook, too. My sister does Facebook, so she may have seen it there. I'm just going to mention the questions that were on it. I'm not going to talk about them very much. But if you took the survey, there was a question about course design, how you felt about course design. There was a question about judges' demeanor at trials. That was a kind of a tough one for me to answer because I didn't go to any trials this year in 2020, in last year rather. I think there was a comment box for any really great experiences. And I think they had a comment box about any bad experiences you've had. They had a question that asked, do you feel comfortable attending an actual trial with safeguards for COVID-19? So I guess NADAC's trying to get a feel for people's... that's a tough one at the moment, because if you haven't had a vaccine... I'm not real comfortable going to a trial. Post-vaccine, I may be more comfortable. So I don't know how I answered that question. There was a question about whether the VT rules should stay or go back to pre-COVID. And I think they had some indication, or maybe that was in Chris's video. I'm getting my facts a little confused, where he thought that if NADAC went 90 days without a trial canceling, that that would be a good indication of maybe rolling back the VT rules. So there was a question about that. And then there a most interesting question, and it does give some insight into what NADAC is thinking, is there was a question about whether you would want barrelers and hoopers, the classes, to merge. And I don't remember the answers, but obviously NADAC is thinking of eliminating barrelers and hoopers and possibly combining them. So NADAC has an awful lot of classes. So it looks like they're trying to rein it back in on the barrelers and hoopers, which also aren't offered at a lot of trials. When gamblers came, a lot of trials started offering that, new game in town, and the barrelers and the hoopers, those were the classes that pretty much got thrown away. So I guess the thought is to merge those two. And then they had a final, for any other feedback you wanted to give NADAC. Just mentioning it. It was, I give NADAC credit for trying to at least get a feel for us, their handlers that attend the trials. One other unrelated to agility note. Recently, there's been a number of people that have passed away, but one that slightly affects this podcast, and I just want to mention it, was Larry King. Larry King passed away at the age of 87, and I wasn't like a giant Larry King fan when he was on CNN, but before he went to cable, I used to listen to Larry King on the radio at night. For a while, I had a job as a security guard, but it was an odd security job. I actually worked at the truck gate at UPS for a security guard company. But the tractor trailers would come in and out, and I would grab paperwork from the drivers. And if they were coming in, I would cut the seals off the back of the trucks, checking the paperwork to be sure that nobody tampered with the load while it was in transit. And I worked the graveyard shift. I think I worked from 11 a.m. to 7. No, 11, sorry, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., I think, or 11:30 p.m. to about 7:30 a.m. I think that's about what it was. And we had a real, the way UPS worked at the time, there were a lot of trucks that came in and out because they had a sorting shift in the early morning. So that's where all the tractor trailers would come in, bringing packages from all over the place. They'd go into a sort, and then they'd go back into other tractor trailers going to other locations. So then all these trucks would take off around maybe 2 o'clock. It was really busy from like 2 to 3. But then after 3 a.m., it was pretty quiet. Occasional truck would come in or out. And during that busy part, there were two guards that would work the truck gate. After that, one of the guards left. And I was the guy who worked that period from like 3 a.m. to the early morning. And I only did that but for about a year. One of my odd jobs I had in my life. But the local radio station out of New York, it's really not a local, it was the big superstation, WOR, ran Larry King at night. He, in the beginning of the night, he was actually live, but... And this was, I think he had been on some years before that. But at this period, when I worked at this truck gate, they would then, I think I caught maybe the last hour of the live show, but then they would repeat the portion of the show that started, I think, at 12. And that would fill the morning hours to maybe 5 or something. And like I said, it wasn't busy. I was just sitting in the guardhouse waiting for a truck to come in. I'd talk to a driver now and then. But it was pretty slow, so I got to listen to Larry King. And Larry King, when he was on the radio, he did not really prepare that much. Sometimes I don't prepare that much for my guests on the podcast. He just always would say it was his natural curiosity. So Larry King has influenced me partly because I like to try just let my curiosity guide me with my guests. I mean, obviously, if you've been listening to my podcast, I have, you know, I ask people how they start. I kind of have my standard questions now that I ask. But if someone brings up something that's interesting, we might go off course. We might go to a little different topic because I'm curious about something they said. And I do credit that to Larry King. Me listening to Larry King back when he really hadn't attained the giant fame of being on CNN. He hadn't done that yet. He was just on the overnight radio. He was still a big, you know, radio star, but radio stars aren't as big as TV stars or TV interviews. In this case, he was. Larry had a lot of problems with his personal life, a lot of wives and stuff. But I did enjoy listening to him during that 1 year period or so when I had this job working at the truck gate. And I definitely enjoyed his radio presence. So I just wanted to give a nod to Larry King. Probably was a small factor in me deciding to do this podcast. And as always, if you're going to a actual trial or you're going to do some videotaped runs, I wish you happy trialing.